Life's better with American Family Insurance. Because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do-it-yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. This week we are taking on the situation with the trolls, and of course we're going to take a close look at all the little details here about who exactly the trolls are and how Bilbo and the dwarves and Gandalf interact with them. And in reading back through this chapter, some new questions have emerged in my mind, and I would like you to be thinking about this as we go along. Before we get into the details of the story, I want to set this up by talking about something that sounds completely different than The Hobbit or Tolkien or The Lord of the Rings. How many of you have played Dungeons & Dragons? And clearly, Dungeons & Dragons, very, very influenced by the work of J.R.R. Tolkien. But I don't want to talk about the trolls in Dungeons & Dragons or halflings or anything like that. I want to talk about the morality chart. You know what I'm talking about. The whole lawful good, neutral evil, chaotic neutral, that whole thing. And if you aren't familiar with it, think of a grid, 3x3, and across the top three squares are all lawful. The middle three squares, as you go down, are all neutral, and the bottom three squares are all chaotic. All of the squares on the left side, vertically, are good. The ones vertically in the middle are neutral, and the ones vertically on the right are evil. So, for example, the top left square is lawful good. The bottom right square is chaotic evil. And these combinations allow you in Dungeons & Dragons to kind of figure out where your character is in regards to motivation, how they deal with laws, how they deal with putting themselves above others or others above themselves. So why does this matter in this chapter about the trolls? Well, I think that it's an important concept for us to look at evil creatures and understand that not all evil creatures are the same. In fact, this is something that I think the ancients and the people writing myths and legends understood. They gave motivation to the creatures that we would simply define as being evil. They had them existing as people, making calculated decisions, showing their true natures. So real quick, let's go through this chart. Think of the top left, lawful good, as the knight. And I'm pulling this from one of those websites that kind of boils this down. This is somebody who follows a strict moral code, and they will always stick to the law in order to do what they're going to do. They try to do good, but they will not break the law to do something the law says they shouldn't. To the right, you have lawful neutral. That's the judge. This is somebody who believes so strongly in justice that they will carry through with this no matter what. So lawful good, think like Superman. Lawful neutral, think somebody like Eddard Stark from the Song of Ice and Fire, or Game of Thrones, if you're more familiar with the TV show. And then on the top right, we have lawful evil. This is the overlord, someone who believes in power above everything else, and they use the law to benefit themselves. On the middle left is the hero. This is somebody who always does the right thing, even if it breaks the law. Think like Spider-Man. True neutral is in the center. Think of the Ents. These are the outsiders. Think of the quote about, we're on no one's side because no one's on our side. That sort of thing. They stay out of it. The law doesn't matter at all. They worry about themselves, but not to the detriment of others or the benefit of others, simply to take care of themselves. On the far right is neutral evil. This is the villain. This is somebody who pursues evil at all costs, but doesn't really take stock of the law one way or the other. It doesn't seem to matter to them. On the bottom left, and this is where we're getting interesting, because these are the areas that this evil side of things and the chaotic side of things, this is where villains often lie. This would be considered the rebel, the chaotic good, somebody who fights the system because the system is corrupt and following the law would no longer be good. Another name for this would be the anti-hero. On the bottom middle, square in the middle, this is the nomad, somebody who only cares for themselves and ignores morality and the laws. This is very similar to neutral evil, but in that case, neutral evil is somebody who pursues evil. They're just corrupt. They just want to see terrible things happen to other people. Whereas chaotic neutral is somebody who just doesn't care about the laws and only about themselves. There's a slight distinction here too between true neutral, the Ents, the middle one, and the chaotic neutral at the bottom, which is more like Captain Jack Sparrow. Think of it as true neutral probably has some justifiable reasons to focus squarely on themselves, whereas chaotic neutral enjoys a certain breaking of laws in order to do what they want for themselves. And then at the bottom right, we have chaotic evil. This is the Joker, the psychopath. This person exists purely to destroy. They revel in acts of evil and breaking the law. They just want to see the world burn. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because I think that this helps us to understand the characters that you come across in any series, any book, any game, any movie. Characters can generally be placed in one or two of these squares. And it's not a perfect system, but it does help us to understand motivation. So, for example, I brought up the Ents. The Ents are true neutral. They worry about themselves because nobody else will. And the laws of other people don't apply to them because they are outside of that system. But what about evil creatures? What about orcs? What about trolls? That's something we're going to dig into in this episode. And before we get to those details, I want you thinking, which of these squares do the trolls belong in? And maybe you're like me. Maybe I have certain assumptions about evil characters, certain expectations that place most of them in a chaotic evil spot, somewhere where they are just wanting to burn the world down. But maybe there's more to it. Maybe not all evil characters fit in the same box. So let's get into the details. So last time, Bilbo was sneaking up on the trolls, and of course he tried to steal the purse out of the pocket, and the purse spoke at him, which is super weird, but it's just what happens in the story. Oh, and by the way, that inspired one of the new shirts on Patreon for those of you who are at the tiers where you get shirts. So go check those out. They're new. You're going to get some new shirts. But yeah, I thought that would be really funny, especially because it's a shirt with a design and a talking purse. And it says William on the purse, by the way. And I figured it's one of those things where, like, if you know, you know. And if somebody recognizes it, you know they're a fan. So it's kind of fun for that. But anyway, let's talk about the trolls. The trolls discover him. And Bilbo, of course, has to respond. They say, "What are you?" And Bilbo says, "Bilbo Baggins, Hobbit. And right there, he almost gives away that he's a burglar. He's clearly not good at this. And then it tells us that he's shaking all over and wondering how to make owl noises before they throttled him, which is, of course, another one of those humorous moments. And I'm going to point out all the things that I think are specifically added in here for that humorous tone so that scenes like this don't become overly dark. And of course, hilarity ensues. They don't know what a burr hobbit is. And they're asking, like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to steal things out of my pocket? Then they start debating about, can they cook him? And we get this line, he wouldn't make above a mouthful, which puts into perspective the size of these trolls. A hobbit isn't very big, but it's much bigger than anything I think I could fit in my mouth. And I mean, that's a funny picture if you think about it, but these must be big enough to fit a hobbit in their mouth. So gigantic. Then they start debating, and this becomes the scene where they are constantly debating. And I think we've all been in situations where we've been around people who are like this, who just constantly argue with each other, but they stay together because that's just kind of how their social system works. Tolkien is pulling from experiences that I think we've all had. They start debating if they could make multiple of these burr hobbits into a pie, or maybe he's a rabbit because he has furry feet. And then Bilbo almost gives away the fact that there are others out there. He basically answers the question about, are there more of you around? And he says, yes, lots. And then he says, oh no, none at all. Not one. Because he just remembered that that would be a bad idea. And this reinforces the fact that Bilbo has never been in a situation like this. He's typically very honest. And most people, and most young people, are. They stick with honesty until they realize that there are benefits to being dishonest. And sometimes those benefits are just simply self-preservation. And to get back to our point about the diagram, the morality diagram, this is a situation that would not play out had these trolls simply been chaotic evil. They simply would have squashed him and then figured out what to do afterwards. But these trolls are people. Sure, they eat other people, humans or hobbits or dwarves or whatever, but that doesn't mean that they act like animals all the time. If anything, they are just really large people who disregard, sometimes, the perspective of the things that they eat. And don't we all, or at least most of us, we rarely think about the opinions of the food on our plate. Even if the food on our plate, when met alive, we would have had very different feelings about. And this isn't particularly put in our faces, but we do get a reminder that Bilbo is a cook, and we get this wonderful comedic conversation. Bilbo gasps and he says, "And please don't cook me, kind sirs. I am a good cook myself, and cook better than I cook, if you see what I mean." We're getting play on word stuff going on, which makes sense for Tolkien, but also would be very funny for young readers. "I'll cook beautifully for you, a perfectly beautiful breakfast for you, if only you won't have me for supper." The juxtaposition in there of cooking breakfast so you don't have me for supper. All of it is very well written. But it reminds us that Bilbo is a cook. And in a similar situation with something like livestock, Bilbo wouldn't think twice. And in this situation, Bilbo's kind of like catching a wild animal in the forest when you're hungry. Fortunately, these trolls have already eaten a village and a half or so, and aren't that hungry. And then next we get what I think is another unexpected line. We have Bilbo basically arguing for keeping himself alive, and then William has some pity for him. He empathizes a little bit. He says, "Poor little blighter," and we're told that he'd already had too much supper and had lots of beer. And this makes me wonder, where did he get the beer? Was this just beer that happened to be in one of the villages that they raided and ate all the people? Or were they carrying barrels of beer around with them? Because I would imagine a barrel of beer for a big troll would act like a big cup of some sort. But no, we're not given more details. But we are led to believe that they enjoy alcoholic beverages and that they may be a little bit sillier, a little bit easier to manipulate in this situation, because they're slightly drunk. And William follows that up with, "Poor little blighter, let him go." He's actually suggesting that they let Bilbo go. This is not something that you expect from an evil creature, somebody who doesn't care about the well-being of the people around them. There's something else going on here. And of course, Bert argues back, and he has a good justification for not letting Bilbo go. "I don't want to have me throat cut in me sleep." And that makes a lot of sense. In fact, their decisions from this point on seem to be about self-preservation and the dangers of being invaded by somebody who might be hostile to them. If you had flipped the situation around and trolls or orcs were sneaking in on a dwarf camp with Bilbo there, would you expect them to act any differently? They have to preserve their own safety. Maybe they wouldn't be interested in eating the orcs or the trolls, but they definitely, if they had caught one, would be very careful about letting that one go back to the rest of the group and let everyone know where they are. So they continue to argue, and of course there's name calling, fat fool, lout. And lout is fun because it's another one of those phrases we don't use very often. It means uncouth or aggressive. And then we find out that William, or Bill, as his friends call him, which again makes sense, this is what people do, has a last name. Bert says, and I won't take that from you, Bill Huggins. Bill the Troll, William the Troll's last name is Huggins. And I think, again, this is one of those funny little bits that's put in there to get a giggle out of a young reader. The trolls begin to fight, and we're told that there was a gorgeous row, which is another one of those phrases that we don't use. Basically, it means a beautiful fight. We're told that they fight like dogs, and they use all sorts of perfectly true and applicable names in very loud voices, which is wonderful. And in great storytelling fashion, the scene seems to play out unexpectedly. It looks like Bilbo's in trouble, and then it looks like, oh no, maybe they might be okay with him. And then it looks like Bilbo's in even more trouble, and then a fight breaks out, and it looks like Bilbo might be able to get away. But then we get this paragraph. That would have been the time for Bilbo to have left, but his poor little feet had been very squashed in Bert's big paw, and he had no breath in his body, and his head was going round. So there he lay for a while, panting, just outside the circle of firelight. Bilbo is dropped to the ground, and he loses his breath. He gets the wind knocked out of him. And I've had this happen to me. I'm sure a lot of you have as well. It's one of those situations where you just have to lay there, trying to breathe, with your head spinning, wondering if you're ever going to breathe again. And so in a situation where he otherwise could have run off, he can't. And then somebody shows up to check on him. And who would you expect from the dwarves to be the first one to kind of poke their head in here and see what's going on? Which one do you think would be most worried about Bilbo? Well, it turns out it's Balin. Balin was the first to welcome Bilbo when he was arriving at the inn to get on the pony and head off. Balin was the second one to show up at Bilbo's house at the beginning of the story, right after Dwalin. We're getting a sense that Balin might be a little bit more compassionate towards Bilbo. He's older, and maybe he sees Bilbo with a bit of a fatherly perspective. Or maybe I'm just seeing things here. Maybe Balin just happens to be, as it stated earlier in the book, that he's their lookout man. And so it was his job to be the first one to go peek and see what's going on, because Bilbo had been taking too long. What do you think? All right, we got to take a quick break, go thank our patrons, and we'll be back with the rest of the story. So don't go anywhere.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
We have four new people who signed up on the Patreon. Let's welcome Ivo R, Jennilypuff, Genemede, or Ganymede, that's what that is. And Melkor Did Nothing Wrong, which is also a wonderful name. And I think you're going to start some debates here on the Patreon, so be careful. Welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you are here. Patreon.com/LOTRLorecast if you're interested in joining this group and getting ad-free episodes and bonus episodes for basically every episode. I think there's like one episode I didn't do a bonus episode for at one point because it was an extended, big, long episode. But you get lots of cool stuff. And brand new t-shirts. Go check out the new t-shirts. I love the designs. These are things that I think would be cool to wear myself, so I'm hoping that other people like them as well. And just go check them out. I already mentioned one of them at the beginning of the show. Also, we have to thank our VIP patrons, AK Music Lover, Apollo, Aragorn III, Alte Morton, Azel Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, Gimli Break, Gemma D, Jezzer, Josh W, Katie S, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Nick K, Nostrils of Sauron, Richard J, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, Sam B, and TJT. Thank you so much for all of your support. Also, we have a brand new review that came in recently. This one is from Gaba Surfer in Denmark. Welcome from Denmark. Thank you for leaving this review. It says, "This is like a cheat sheet for LOTR lore. Found this podcast by coincidence and fell straight in love with it. Been a huge LOTR nerd for more than 25 years now. Been playing MERP and the same or with the same group for maybe 20 years, and the Silmarillion always has been hard for me to read. I get bored and read without grasping what's written, but these may be too short episodes." Yeah, sorry about that. I try to keep them brief. "And Tom's easy to understand delivery of the lore have rekindled my hunger for LOTR lore. I'm 20 episodes in and already so many pieces of the lore have fallen into place, and now I absolutely have to read all the books again, not counting the Silmarillion." Ha ha ha. I totally get it. I'm so glad that you're enjoying it and that what I'm doing is something that is helpful to you. Thank you to everybody who helps support the show. Thank you for leaving 5-star reviews on Apple and Spotify. Thank you for sharing this with your friends. And as we get closer to the Rings of Power Season 2, I am so excited. I posted some questions in the Patreon that are available for anybody. Free members, you can sign up for free and just be part of the group and get notifications and things over there. You can join us on the Discord and talk about all of these things that we're so excited about. So we'd love to have you come join the group. All right, let's move on with the rest of the show. Here we go. So Balin comes up and, of course, checks on Bilbo, ends up in the middle of all of this, and the trolls stop fighting because they notice a dwarf. And we're given this little detail here, and I'm going to continue to point out things like this that I probably could have done a better job noting on earlier episodes, but there are moments like this where we learn that the trolls simply detest the very sight of dwarves uncooked that I think we could probably categorize them as significant moments of lore or significant moments of background and depth that help us understand the world a little bit better. Trolls detest dwarves. They live up in the mountains. It makes sense. They are natural enemies. But trolls like to cook dwarves. And so if they're cooked, they don't detest them so much. And if we think of trolls as people and not monsters, this makes sense. The trolls and the dwarves are like competing tribes from different cultures. They detest each other because they have a history of violence and misunderstanding. Also, one of them likes to eat the other, so it would be like one of the tribes being cannibals. So it makes sense that the dwarves don't like the trolls so much. Also, the trolls are naturally more evil. It doesn't mean that just because they act like people, that they don't have instincts that tend towards evil because they were corrupted creatures, just like the orcs. And I guess all of that's to say that there is always more complexity here, and it makes sense that in Tolkien's later years that he was debating the origin of the orcs and if that even makes sense for what he was going for. There's depth and complexity, and it's not just black and white. Also, although the trolls tend to act like idiots and they call each other dumb, they aren't completely brainless. They throw Balin in a sack, and then Tom responds and says, "There's more to come yet," or, "I'm mighty mistook, lots and none at all it is." And he states this in a way that shows that he has deciphered the riddle that Bilbo basically gave them about lots but none at all. And he says, "No Burhobbits, but lots of these here dwarves." So that makes sense. There are no more like him, but there's lots of others. That's about the shape of it. Tom feels like he's figured out the puzzle, and he actually has. I don't think Bilbo meant for that to be the meaning of what he was saying, but in Tom's mind, it makes sense. And it clues him into this idea that this one dwarf isn't the only one. And so they pull themselves together. They don't act like wild animals. They don't just charge out of the trees and out of the light into the darkness where they could be attacked. No, they back away from the firelight and they hide in the shadows. And I have to imagine that these have to be some pretty big shadows for them to be hiding in. But maybe the trees are large and maybe the flames are big. I don't know. But of course, more dwarves show up, one or two at a time, and they get thrown in sacks. In fact, it says here, Pop went a nasty, smelly sack over his head, and he was down. I think that's another one of those humorous points. And then we get another little snippet of lore. There needs to be a word for this, like of revelation, revelatory fact-telling. I don't know, but it says here that Biffer and Bomber had given a lot of trouble and fought like mad, as dwarves will when cornered. Now, it doesn't say that all of them fought like mad, and so I think that means that Biffer and Bomber tended to be warriors, or at least stronger, and in Bomber's case, more stout and probably harder to put in a sack. But we do get a sense that dwarves in general, when cornered, will fight aggressively for their lives. Then Thorin shows up. And he is the only of the dwarves, the only one that is not caught unawares. And I think this tells us something else about Thorin. Thorin is just that much more world weary. He's just that much more experienced and shrewd and wise than the other dwarves. And this, of course, is part of his arc. This is building to us getting a certain understanding of who he is. And then, of course, later in the story, seeing how that plays out. We're told that he came expecting mischief and didn't need to see his friend's legs sticking out of sacks to tell him that things were not at all well. He could put two and two together in a way that some of the other dwarves couldn't. So he calls out from the distance and says, "What's all the trouble? Who's been knocking my people about?" And Bilbo's able to respond because remember, he fell to the ground and is in the shadows. And he tells Thorin, "It's trolls. They're hiding in the bushes with sacks." He prepares them. And then Thorin's response is, "Oh, are they?" And he jumped forward to the fire before they could leap on him. This shows us other things about Thorin. He's brave. He caught up a big branch all on fire at one end, and Bert got that end in his eye before he could step aside. That put him out of the battle for a bit. Bilbo did his best. He caught hold of Tom's leg as well as he could. It was thick as a young tree trunk. Another detail to show us how big these trolls actually are. But he was sent spinning up into the top of some bushes when Tom kicked the sparks up in Thorin's face. We're given a picture here that they are fighting as well as they can, but the odds are against them. These trolls are much too big. So of course, they eventually get Thorin. He's not able to take them all out. Bilbo tries to help, but he's not much help. And then they start debating about what to do with all these dwarves. Because we know they enjoy them cooked. And even if they're not hungry now, they could cook them and save them for later. And that's when we're told it was just then that Gandalf came back, but no one saw him. And if this isn't foreshadowing, I don't know what is. How many times does Gandalf come back and nobody sees him? Think of, for example, the Battle of Helm's Deep at the end of the battle, or Gandalf the White returning when nobody thought he would be alive. Now, I could read out the entire debate that happens between the trolls with themselves and, of course, the voice that Gandalf is making that tricks them into thinking that the other trolls are arguing against them. And that would take a while. So I'm not going to do that, but I will point out what I think is the most important detail about this is that although Gandalf has this ability to somehow disguise his voice or trick them into thinking that it's the other trolls talking, that part's interesting. But I think more to the point of this episode is that these trolls are people and they're not complete idiots. There are multiple times during this conversation where they almost shake away this other voice. The three of them almost come to some sort of decision together. They almost are not fooled. And you'll notice that the tact that Gandalf is using here is not to convince them of something that they otherwise will not be convinced of. There's no way that Gandalf is convincing them to just let the dwarves go or something like that. His voice is not that powerful. but it is powerful enough to keep them bickering and confused. That is Gandalf's plan. Because what we, the readers, don't know is that trolls can't be out in the sunlight, or at least these trolls can't. They have to have a cave somewhere, somewhere where they can hide from the sun. And if the sun touches them, they turn to stone. This feels very, very fairy tale-like. For just at that moment, the light came over the hill, and there was a mighty twitter in the branches. William never spoke, for he stood turned to stone as he stooped, and Bert and Tom were stuck like rocks as they looked at him. And there they stand to this day, all alone, unless the birds perch on them. For trolls, as you probably know, must be underground before dawn, or they go back to the stuff of the mountains they are made of, and never move again. This is what had happened to Bert and Tom and William. And this leaves us some questions. Do all trolls turn to stone when dawn comes? Is it the time that matters or the light? It seems like it's the light that matters. So is it sunlight? Can they come out during cloudy days? Is that how they can march to war under Sauron's big plumes of smoke? What's actually going on there? Also, where did they come from? They come from the rocks or the earth, the mountains that they're made of. But were they built by Melkor? Doesn't Melkor just corrupt things that were already living? It sounds like they are very similar to the dwarves. The dwarves themselves were made by Aule out of the stuff of the earth. So do they have more in common than we would think? Are they corrupted dwarves? There's a lot of questions that are left unanswered here. And we're going to dig into what we can find out in the bonus episode this week. So if you want to know more about trolls, then hey, that's coming up soon. But what we need to know right now is that this is Gandalf's method for outsmarting the trolls. He doesn't take an aggressive approach, because we see that that didn't work with Thorin. He doesn't just pop up over the ridge wondering what's going on. He's wise. He's been around a long time, and he knows the weaknesses of his enemies. And he leverages that against them. He makes the job easier for himself than it otherwise would have been. But ultimately, we can't feel like this is a huge triumph, because sure, the trolls are evil. They were going to eat the dwarves and Bilbo and probably Gandalf if they could. They do terrible things. But is that their nature? Is that something that is inevitable about them? At some point, William was going to show mercy on Bilbo. They can't be 100% evil. So where do they fall on this morality spectrum? What would make the most sense for them? Are they true neutral? They don't really care about the laws because the laws don't really apply to them. They're not part of the same society as these other peoples. So they're more like the Ents, at least until they are chained up and corrupted or put into military service by some sort of dark lord. In that case, they have to follow those laws. Are they chaotic evil? I think the answer is clearly no for that. Are they neutral evil? Do they prefer evil, but then mostly think about themselves? I don't think that's necessarily the case either. Are they chaotic neutral? They don't care about the laws, but like when things get kind of messed up, they want to break down barriers and do what they want? Maybe. It's tricky, right? So which do you think they fall in? What do you think is the best description for these trolls? Because they definitely have aspects that other people do, and there is the option for compassion. So they can't be all bad. Or maybe I'm wrong. Let me know what you think. Thanks for tuning in again. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Paints. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter interior paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.